always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this what felt like inevitable Monday by you guys, hopefully. What I did before I went live here was send out a link two people on Twitter that if they clicked it, they could pop on here and they could talk about this Lakers team, this Lakers season, whatever it is that they wanted to talk about. And you know what? I can put it, I'll put it here in the chat too. If you guys want to, hop on here and give your thoughts on this game and on this season, it is James, it is old. I forgot to update it. I didn't forget to. I just have to update the things. But anyway, so there's that one. And then I was hearkening back to brighter days back when the season was still rolling along. But yeah, so what I did here, I put that link in the chat and I put that tweet out there on Twitter. And if you guys want to talk about that game, if you guys want to talk about this season, if you guys want to talk about this off season, you guys are more than welcome to click that link, hop on here, give me your thoughts in a polite way, preferably, and we can hash that out. The plan for the show otherwise, though, is obviously to recap that game, what we saw. From a Lakers team that fought to the bitter end. A Lakers team that part of me is going to miss because I thought that they showed a lot of fight there towards the end, but also part of me is going to be like, all right, this was a nice appetizer to what hopefully is a fruitful and fulfilling main course to come here, come in this offseason. And as we fully embark on the Luka Doncic era, we may have, there's a distinct possibility that we just saw the final moments of the LeBron James Lakers era. And if that is the case, then the last we saw of LeBron was missing that floater that would have extended the game. But also we saw from LeBron an incredible effort to give the Lakers that opportunity in the first place. And I think that all of that is a pretty great encapsulation of the LeBron James Lakers experience, if this was it. And then I'm sure as we put a wrap on this game and on this season, you guys are going to want to segue over to this offseason and start to discuss what we would like to see from this front office and what's at stake for this front office. So surely we will discuss some of that as well. Whatever comes up, comes up. So let's go ahead quick reminder, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, turn on those notifications for the channel and for YouTube so you get the notifications for the channel. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts. Preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere you get them is perfectly fine with me. I also saw that we have our first guest here, first couple of guests. And what I'm going to tell you guys is once we start getting guests on here, based on how these things have gone in the past when I've done this, people start popping on here quite a bit and very quickly. So you guys, if you want to talk and get your voice heard on the show, you're going to want to get in here early and quickly. And I will answer people in the order that I see them. So let's go ahead, dive on in, quickly recap the game, and then we'll jump on into the guest that we have waiting for us. So the final here was 115 to 110. I thought the Lakers, I honestly thought going into this thing that this would be one of those like 1-2-3 Cancun blowouts there at the end of the season that you'll see from teams. You saw it from Atlanta. You saw it from Philadelphia. You've seen it from, you know, plenty of teams this year and over the playoffs history. And I'm going to just hop out here and say that I sold this team short in expecting that from them. They fought to the very, very end. Look, OKC is so much better than the Lakers are with or without Luka, I think. And at the end of the day, those stretches where the Lakers were like playing some of their best basketball in the series, it was always really clear that they were doing just enough to stay above water. Like, I don't know if you've ever watched somebody who, like an adult try to swim who doesn't necessarily know how to swim. And it's a lot of flailing. It's a lot of splashing. And it's like a nose that's barely above the water. And that's kind of what it felt like we were watching from the Lakers in those moments that they were like hanging tight with OKC. But eventually gravity, water wins in those situations. And I think that's what we saw for the first three games. And in this one, Lakers had good looks there at the very end. And unfortunately, weren't able to take care of business there to extend the series. I want to give credit to Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura and to LeBron James. They scored respectively. Austin scored 27. Rui scored 24 or 25. LeBron scored 24. Austin played 43 minutes. Rui played 43 minutes. LeBron played 40 minutes at the ripe old age of 41 years old. And they did, I thought, everything that they possibly could to extend this thing. And unfortunately, we're not joined by, you know, their starting counter, you know, their fellow starters. DeAndre Ayton only played 21 minutes in this one, and J.J. Redick benched him out of frustration. Marcus Smart played 36 minutes, and for all the good that he did in this one, I thought also made some just critical turnovers over the course of the game. They kind of negated it, so he wound up being kind of a net neutral. Jackson Hayes played one of his better, probably his actual best game of the series. 27 minutes, scored 18 points, grabbed 5 boards, and really kept the Lakers afloat given the game that DeAndre Ayton played in this one. And then, you know, you look at the rest of the guys who, you know, you look at the rest of the minutes allotment here. Maxi Kleber only played those final 30 seconds. I thought that was some galaxy brain stuff from J.J. Redick there. Jared Vanderbilt, despite having a bone sticking out of his hand at one point in this thing, gave it a go, played 3 minutes. And, you know, I just think it's really badass that he even gave it a go in the first place. Adu Thero played 3 minutes. I thought that was kind of low for him. Obviously, Jake LaRavia did not play. Dalton Connect did not play. Nick Smith Jr. And Bronny James also did not play. So it was a very short rotation here for J.J. Redick as he tried to extend the Lakers season. And that path was just too narrow to navigate. Other than that, look, like roll through some of the numbers here for OKC. I honestly thought that A.J. Mitchell was the best player in this series for OKC. Now, I think that was kind of made possible by the amount of attention that the Lakers paid to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But at the end of the day, you do need somebody to execute on those opportunities, and Mitchell did just that. Isaiah Hartenstein had the 5 loudest points that you will ever see in a playoff game. He was a plus 30 in this game. The only person who came close to that total was Jared McCain, who was a plus 27 in this game. Daryl Morey, I look forward to seeing you in hell. Aside from that, though, I thought that this was a just like a like it was just a perfect showing of of how OKC just kind of executes and executes and executes and walks you down and walks you down and walks you down. And you feel good within the last couple of possessions, and then you don't feel so good anymore. But at the end of the day, we have a season to look back on. We have people who have been waiting to give their thoughts on this series, and people who I will go ahead and welcome into the show. First person I saw in the queue to start this thing is David Brandon, who I believe, David, you're a OKC fan who I believe, gosh, what's your bird rights, right? Is on Twitter, right? Thanks for hopping on, bud.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you opening this up. I saw you open the show and I was like, I needed to come in and give props to the toughness of the team, because I mean, like you said, I think this was not a fantastic matchup for the Lakers, but they had a ton of fight. I think the culture there, like Redick coached well outside of the Hachimura thing, which is kind of baffling.
yeah.
And yeah, I don't know what the roster looks like next year, but I think the culture is there. The toughness is there. Like there's, they can hold their heads high. So.
Well, so this is the thing, and this was what I kind of talked about in the upright video that I recorded for Offside before today's game, was like, you know, you have to face a team like OKC to realize where that bar currently resides, right? And whether it's OKC, whether it's San Antonio moving forward, San Antonio currently has their hands full with Minnesota, who doesn't appear to be going anywhere anytime soon either. Wherever Giannis winds up, right, that's going to be a real basketball team next year. Like, the Lakers, this series and this playoffs, like, the point of it all was to see, and unfortunately, without Luka Doncic, what you can do to piece together a competitive team this upcoming summer and where that bar currently sits. And I think that's something that the Thunder provided them that example for. And the first few games, right, the Lakers lose by 18, 18, and 21 or whatever it was. And it was just like, you know, and the thing I compared the Thunder in the offside chat tonight to Floyd Mayweather, where they just sit back, they play steady basketball. They play, you know, just kind of wait on that back foot and they wait for that opportunity to throw the counterpunch. Team makes a mistake, one counterpunch. Team makes another mistake, another counterpunch. And all of a sudden you're looking up, you're like, what the hell? We're down 13. And that's just like how good OKC is. And they kind of go at teams in waves, and they're this team filled with athletes who are ready and willing to execute. And I guess my question, like from an outsider perspective, to somebody who pays close attention to the way that the Thunder are kind of run, is how much focus is spent in the draft rating process, or in the prospect analysis process, or even like other NBA players there, to the person as much as the talent that OKC brings in?
I think it's a lot. And I think there's a particular, I don't have sources in the locker room. Frankly, I don't know if anybody does. They're very tight-lipped. I've talked to Matt Tumbleson a few times. He's a very nice wall. But the team, I'm from Oklahoma City. I've lived here almost my whole life. I love Oklahoma City, but there's not a lot here. They have a particular type of guy they go after. Usually these are guys that they have families, they have steady girlfriends or fiancés or wives. A lot of them have kids. They go after guys who are not necessarily not single, but most of them don't tend to be single. They go after a lot of guys who tend to be, I think they value work ethic a lot. They value communication a lot. That has not always been the case. Presti early on, I think, was more of a talent over everything guy. I think that that philosophy has evolved as he's gone on. I think if you want to keep players here, some of that stuff matters more, just because, like, if you want to go clubbing, this is not going to be a place that you're going to enjoy, you know? So.
Yeah, I think the off-court stuff is interesting, and I think also very worthwhile studying. But I also think, like, in terms of, like, their approach to basketball, one of the things that I noticed over the course of the series, and I say this as the father of two young kids, my kids sprint everywhere. Like, when you have young kids, there's no walking. And if your kid is walking, they're probably sick. And it really kind of stuck out to me that, like, I don't care what it is with OKC, that, you know, if there is a place that they need to get to and you're on a basketball court, the expectation is to sprint. You know, you sprint to your screen spot, you sprint in your cut, you sprint in this, and most importantly, really, you sprint up and you sprint back, you know, sprint up on offense, sprint back on defense. Nobody's going to beat you up the court. Nobody's going to beat you back down the court. And it takes a certain kind of person to play with that kind of motor all game long. And if that is the expectation, and I think it's really important that Shea kind of helps set that expectation. If your star is running as hard as he is, game in, game out, possession in, possession out, your 12th guy for damn sure isn't going to finish last in sprints. And I think that's something that, like, the Lakers are really going to have to focus on this year. And I guess my question to you is, like, how long did it, because this isn't something that happens overnight. So how long, you know, from the Westbrook, KD, Harden era to where the Thunder currently reside right now, did it take to finally, like, cultivate this culture that OKC has kind of implemented to the extent that it has?
I think to some degree it probably started when they hired Dagnall as the head coach. He'd been the G League coach for a while. He's been in the organization for a while. But that's really when they were churning through a lot of young guys. Obviously, they tanked for about 2 years-ish. They traded a few guys away, but they still made the playoffs. They had about 2 years when they were not good. But they were churning through a lot of young guys. And even during that period, those guys played super, super hard. Part of it was, you know, your Lindy Waters or your Isaiah Roby, like, this may be your only shot. Those guys were hustling. But Shea has also always been a guy that
Somebody who wasn't like a crazy basketball talent, but, like, just played fucking hard all the time.
Yep. And they, I think when they started the rebuild, I mean, I think it's been an emphasis. Westbrook was a guy, no one, whatever else you say about Westbrook, no one's ever impugning his work ethic. That's a thing that, like, has been a thing for a while, but it really started to be an emphasis, I think, with Dagnall. You know, coming up from the lower level, you know, just a different mindset. I think, too, this team being very young helps with that to some degree. I think this is going to sound like a weird comparison, but they're a little bit like those Denver, like, George Karl, Masai Ujiri teams, where most of the guys, like, Shea usually only plays about 32 to 35 minutes max, and everybody else goes down from there. It's like, they want to run 12, 13 guys deep. They want to run you off the court. They want to be able to, I mean, Caruso, they basically put in bubble wrap till the playoffs, so he can just be on the court for 20 minutes running around like a madman. Part of it isn't just, I mean, the Lakers, as much as I think they would love to. He's one of those, like,
the way that they handle Caruso is like, I don't know if you've ever, like, seen a Belgian Malinois who is like,
yeah, you know, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, they just do like if you a fun TikTok scroll is just like to you know TikTok search or real search or whatever Belgian Malinois doing dumbass Belgian Malinois stuff. We have one, and I remember when we had a we were let's see, this was we were renting a house back in California, and it had a retaining wall that sat about, I'm 5'10", so it was about like almost exactly 6 feet. And my wife and I are like at the base of this retaining wall, and we basically say, like, do we think Callie can climb this thing? Like, are we sure? And she like very casually walks up between us, looks at the four of us and our four eyes combined, and goes like, you know, and jumps up this retaining wall. And so like, and that's like a casual Belgian Malinois. Like she's, as far as those, that breed of dog goes, she's very laid back and, you know, all that stuff. What a lot of owners who have Belgian Malinois do is they'll rev them up, right? They'll rev them up. And then you'll see those dogs run up like 20 foot worth of, and I feel like that's what the Thunder do with Caruso is right before he's getting ready to enter the game. There's somebody who has like a hold of his jersey and they're just like, go, 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 and go out there. And he's just like, I'm fighting everybody. And it's like, it's just, you know, and it's just like the perfect cultivation of that guy's skill set. And it's the perfect culture for that guy to reside in because he's ready to play as hard as he can possibly play for the 20 to 25 minutes that he's out there. And every single person who was in that OKC organization looks at basketball the same way, where if they are out there, they are expected to play with Corey Brewer levels of infinite turbo. And that's just Shout out, Corey Brewer, makes him so good. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's 100%. I mean, you've watched Caruso in LA. Like, you know exactly what he's like. When he comes in, there's a tangible difference. Like, even for this team, you know, like you said, they play pretty hard. They run all over the floor, but even then, when Caruso comes in, there's a tangible difference in the energy level and just how much like guys get up. There was a podcast a few months ago that some of them went on. I think it was Jay Will was talking about it. A lot of the young guys, they'll play a bunch of pickup games back to back to back. It'll be like 5, 6, 7 games back to back. And Caruso would play like two of them and then bow out, and they were ribbing him because all these guys are like, you know, 20. And Caruso's like, hey, do you want me now or do you want me in April? You know, it's there. You can get me now. He's like, I'll play with you guys right now. He's like, I'll put the clamps on you. I'll lock you down. But do you want me now or do you want me in April? Because you're saving me right now. I'm 32. I'm not 32. I think so. He's like, I'm not 20. You know, I got to have the energy in my legs. I think LeBron's same, watching him.
That's what they did all year. They just waited. They waited. And like, they waited and they waited to be able to use him in a Luka, on a Luka team. They weren't expecting that he was going to have to be LeBron or whatever. But
bye, everyone.